The Labor Day event from Dell Technologies is here, and it's time to take productivity to another level. End the summer strong by upgrading your growing business to the latest tech. This new season begins with up to 48% off top performance laptops like Bostro, taking performance to the next level with 12th gen Intel Core processors. You'll also save big on monitors, docks, mice, and more must-have accessories. Plus, get free shipping on everything. It's the perfect time to get ahead with powerful tech designed to stay motivated throughout the year and encourage collaboration and innovation among your team. Now, at special prices for a limited time only. Summer might be gone, but it's just the beginning. What's next for you? Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to save up to 48% on our latest technology.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Hey, there's an all-star game in your neighborhood.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
No way in hell am I going to that game tonight? I'd have to leave 5 minutes ago.
Yep. You too. Swing and a high fly ball drilled. Forget it. Giancarlo Stanton deep into the pavilion in left center field.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, Bucks linebacker Shaq Barrett. Still to come. Jets wide receiver Braxton Berrios. Steelers running back Najee Harris. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. And now it's Rich Eisen.
50 days until the Bills and the Rams kick it off just up the road from here on the Rich Eisen Show studio in El Segundo, California. Hour number two of our program. Ian Rappaport will join us in 20 minutes time. What is going on with Jimmy Garoppolo? What is going on? When are we going to hear about Deshaun Watson? I mean, the Browns open training camp next Tuesday. I mean, I'm assuming we're going to find that out between now and next Tuesday. And that being how long a suspension for Deshaun Watson is going to be. Apparently half a season, it seems. Is what people are talking about right now. And if that's the case, then it'll be in the hands of Commissioner Roger Goodell. Do you up it or not? And word on the street is that if it's a full year suspension, then there's a lawsuit coming. And good luck with that, as Tom Brady would point out to you. So Ian's going to join us in about 18 minutes time on that. And I would suggest you not miss it. Braxton Berrios and Najee Harris of the Jets and Steelers, respectively, joining us in hour number three of this show. I just predicted the Las Vegas Raiders are going to go 12-5 to back my play that I think they're going to win the AFC West. They're the first team that's all in to training camp as the veterans report today. Davante Adams and Derek Carr back together again. I think that is going to be a dynamic duo. I am, however, leaning towards the Buffalo Bills to just win the whole damn shooting match. Ooh. If not the AFC, then the whole darn shooting match anyway. So this is the way I'm leaning. I've got about 5 weeks until the NFL game day morning kickoff program requires me to put a marker down on who wins the Super Bowl. I got some time.
Chalk pick. Bills are the favorite right now.
Is that right? I can't argue against it.
I think Bills favorite and Josh Allen, MVP favorite.
I wonder how that must be freaking Bills fans.
Double-double. Yeah.
The whole world is thinking, we believe in you, we expect it. Let's go to the phone lines right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Jerry in Cincinnati has been waiting a while. What's up, Jerry? How you been?
Hey, Rich, can you hear me?
I can. You're on the air, sir.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
So I'm calling to see what you think of my idea for a reimagined college football system. So the idea is just eliminate all conferences and have a 72-team league with three tiers of 24 schools apiece. So Georgia and Alabama would usually be a tier one, and Tulane and Kansas would be tier three or sometimes a tier two. You'd actually relegate the bottom 12 teams every year and promote 12 teams up. You'd have a 12-game season. Four of the games are set aside for rivalry games. Four games are in your own tier, and two games in each of the other tiers that you're not a part of. And then finally, the scheduling between the tiers is done kind of World Cup draw style with ping pong balls at a multi-day event like the NFL draft.
For the schedule?
For the schedule, yep.
Okay. So give me, for instance, Alabama would obviously have to play Auburn, right? Georgia. LSU, And then just in terms of rivalry games, right? I mean, you gotta see that. Maybe you throw Florida in there. I don't know. And then yeah. What? So those are your rivalry games. And then they take on four teams from the tier two. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if they're in tier one, they would take four teams from tier one.
Alabama's in tier one. Yeah. So, okay. Then they take four more teams in tier one. Okay. Yeah. Which would be, I guess, USC, Ohio State, right?
Well, tier one would be ranked like 1 through 24, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you set aside the rivalry games, you just say, okay, Alabama and Ohio State are in tier one, and you have ping pong balls, basically, like the World Cup, and you figure out who Alabama would play week one and in tier one.
And then who plays who where, right? I mean, I hear what you're saying. To me, that's way too random of a scheduling process for coaches and athletic directors to sign off on right there. And I do, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jimmy's thought it out. I mean, I kind of dig the relegation of it as well. But you're not going to abolish conferences. That's never going to happen. I mean, the SEC is going to just stay intact. The Big Ten is going to stay intact. And then whatever third entity might exist between whatever other conferences, the crazy fly in the ointment here are the contracts that apparently the ACC has that these
ESPN with the networks,
right? That ties them from binds them from joining another conference right now, or any other conference trying to fight there to get them, you know. And so that's kind of the fly in the ointment. If that didn't exist, I think the ACC would have already been broken up. and Clemson and Miami and Florida State
SEC
would have been in the SEC by now.
Yeah.
Or they'd be next in line.
Can you
and
can
so
we
that's
just
the
imagine,
way this is all going to go. As you know, that's the way this is going to go.
Can we just think for a second, though, the type of rating number it would get if we did have a random ping pong draw for the schedule? That would be ridiculous.
I guess.
Like, Feinbaum is hosting that with, like, Gus Johnson.
To find out who Alabama's playing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would be the highest. They would get Super Bowl ratings in the South.
To find out who Auburn's playing this year.
Yeah.
And just, where?
And where. Like,
and where?
Yeah,
and
so
where?
So each ping pong has the at on it. Like, half have the at with the team, and then half don't. So you draw the road schedule and the home schedule.
No, I mean, you'd have to have a separate ping pong ball
for
container
ats.
For ats and yeah. road. Like, you can't wind up with the ping pong balls coming out to give you 19 road games. You know what I'm saying?
No, of course.
So you'd go to the
like,
road
ping pong
ball.
Hey, we're drawing your road ball. Schedule. Boom, there's your road schedule.
Right.
And we're drawing your home schedule. Boom, there's your home game.
Right. And then, I guess you remove the home ping pong ball from your... from your thing the minute it pops up on the app.
Yes.
Right. And then you go in and pull it out, boom. Massive number.
Oh, yeah, I get it, but there's no way that Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney and Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Day and all those people would be just like let it up to the randomness of a ping pong ball machine. It ain't happening.
It's not up to them. Like, just remove that from it. Just imagine a world in where this is taking place.
It's just at some point...
10 million,
ACC teams will be free enough to join.
Easy.
At some point, you know, ACC teams will be free enough to join another conference. That's how it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And by like 2030, we're going to figure something out where one conference plays another, and there'll be like maybe four entities around the country. And the winner of those entities will end up playing in a college football playoff.
Yes.
And kids are going to get paid, and they're going to figure out what they're going to pay them, and they're going to figure out how to work whatever NIL deals within their own conferences. And one conference might have a better NIL deal than another, and they'll get the better players, and that's the way it's going to go. I really feel that.
Seems like it's already going.
That's the way it's going. It's constantly going places. And if I'm the Big Ten, and again, I'll say it one more time. I'm the Big Ten. I'm calling up Cal and Stanford and say, you're a package deal. You're coming with us. Right now. Those are the two teams that I want to get into the San Francisco market, and I want those two schools. Their academics are phenomenal. You've got another rivalry built in. That's two more teams. You got two in Southern California. You get two in Northern California. You get the California market kind of locked up.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. You got the Los Angeles market. You got the San Francisco market. And you wouldn't have to twist a school president's arm at all to let you want Cal and Stanford. Of course you do. Those are the two that I'd want. I know if people are mentioning Oregon, you're mentioning Washington. I understand that. But it's more than just that. You gotta look at the markets, you gotta look at the schools, and you gotta look at the academics. Because that's still apparently supposed to exist, right? Those are the two that I'd choose from the Big Ten.
Oregon has always kind of felt like an SEC team.
Big
anyway.
Ten West.
With the speed and just the fun of the uniforms and the way their offense has always been kind of a little innovative. SEC to me anyway.
At some point, the Southeast Conference is going to take somebody from the Western time zone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, it
seems like a matter of
and
time.
And it'll be like, okay, it's the Southeast Conference Western Division?
Yeah, they got a division.
I don't know. East, hey, North, look, South. And people will be like, how are they going to be able to do that, Rich? What do you think? The Atlanta Falcons played in the NFC West forever, okay?
Yeah. Cowboys are in the East.
I know. Yeah, it's exactly. We're teaching kids geography lessons based on football conferences, divisions. Thank goodness.
Rich, we live in Big Ten country now.
We actually do.
So
it's actually not.
Don't you forget it, sir. When I saw Coop at visiting day, and I'm like, did you hear about UCLA and USC? And he's like, yeah, I did. He goes, that means we're going to see Michigan games in LA? I'm like, bingo.
Yeah,
bingo.
Please.
Maybe Rose one
Bowl,
a year.
Oh, my God.
Maybe Michigan's at USC 1 year and they're at UCLA the next.
Yeah.
Got to think so, right?
Maybe. Oh. I'll take it. If Harbaugh would, I mean, that's a road trip to Southern California every year. I would do that. If I'm a Big Ten school, I would do that in a million years.
Recruiting. Come out here and win.
Yes.
Recruiting.
Yeah. Right. You know, and you give them a sweater and say, you'll have to wear this when you come to school. But guess what? Have you ever seen a leaf turn? I'll never forget at the Super Bowl in Detroit in 2005. I did a chalk talk for some media, some conglomerate.
Yeah.
You know, I emceed a chalk talk with at the time the best college football player on the planet, Reggie Bush. And we're in Detroit. Snow's falling outside, and he's staring out the window. And I'm like, "What you looking at?" He goes, "I'm watching the snowfall." And I just thought to myself, "Wait a minute, he's the one with the San Diego area code on his eye black underneath his eyes." I just turned to him. I'm like, "Have you ever seen snowfall?" And he goes, "No, this is the first time."
That is.
Stood next to Reggie Bush as he watched snowfall for the first time. Well, guess what? Big Ten country, there's going to be a lot of Southern California kids who are going to see snowfall for the first time. And I would just counsel them to say, don't make it happen in the middle of the third quarter of a game at Michigan or at Ohio State or at Michigan State.
No.
Yeah, maybe you should sit in an ice chamber before you do that.
Cry up. Imagine it's like the night game at Penn State, the whiteout's happening and it's snowing.
Right.
And
terrifying. Never been in that environment before.
Speaking of Detroit, Jeff in Detroit back here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Jeffrey?
What's going on, man? I'm just sitting up here thinking about and Coop pulling up to the stadium with your maize and blue all rocking the colors, baby. That's so dope, man. That is really, really dope.
I can't wait.
Listen, welcome back.
Thank you,
I'm
sir.
Loving the tan with the grizzled look to you. You look real fresh, man. You look like you smell. Do you know what I'm saying? When somebody looks so good on TV, it looks like they smell good through the screen. First of all, man, you guys were talking about Rich Eisen's etiquette in flying.
Yes.
The one thing I love about you guys is when you bring that up, because me being 5'5", and I'm sure TJ understands this, when you sit down in an airplane, it's almost no room. But me being 5'5", sure, pull your chair back. No problem with me. No problem at all.
I can't relate, Jeff.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
With all of this going on, and I'm just sitting here thinking, Lamar Jackson really hasn't said anything about his contract. If I'm Lamar Jackson and his people, I'm waiting on the Deshaun Watson situation to resolve, because at that point, I'm average. Give this guy guaranteed money, this, that, and the other. And in my opinion, I've looked at Lamar as somewhat of a better quarterback than Deshaun. I guess that it might be just him, but with the electricity that he brings to his team, it's almost like, dude, we got to pay him whatever he wants, because it's 100% true. Deshaun Watson kind of messed up the thing for everybody. And
well, tell me about it. Hey, and thanks for the call, Jeff. I greatly appreciate it. I mean,
Kyler Murray's not yet signed, folks. By the way.
Seems like he wants to get that done, though.
By the way, Arizona reports next Tuesday.
By tomorrow. Oh, rookies tomorrow, sorry.
Yeah, Arizona reports next Tuesday.
Yeah.
He's still not signed.
Got a few days.
You haven't heard a thing on that. That's another, make a note. I got to ask that of Ian in 5 minutes.
Well, that makes me think something's getting done,
yeah,
right?
Honestly, I've heard nothing, but everything is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Lamar, I have no idea. I have been very vocal about Deshaun Watson's masseuse behavior and Instagram behavior. And it's been a while since we've seen him play. I would put Deshaun Watson above Lamar Jackson on the quarterback list. Deshaun Watson.
It's close.
I know it's close. You could say it's close.
Close.
And I know Lamar won an MVP. And I know Lamar is, you know, Lamar, and he does some crazy things
like
on
what?
The field.
Oh, on the field.
On the field. Oh, yeah. Crazy things on the field that you don't see before. Deshaun Watson's first career start. I was in that building on a Thursday night, man, in Cincinnati, Ohio, after Bill O'Brien didn't start the season with him for whatever was his reasoning. And then was it Tom Savage who got the start? And then Tom Savage was benched at halftime. And he throws Lamar
halftime
out there. And then his first start is the next week on a short week. And Lamar's using offensive linemen as his tight ends because the tight ends are all banged up. Deshaun Watson was, pardon me. And Deshaun Watson's first career start on the road in Cincinnati on a Thursday night. Yeah. They couldn't move the ball a lick because they were so banged up on a short week. And a kid getting his first career start after he doesn't even get all the reps in training camp.
He had a 49-yard touchdown.
He ran one in from, as Mooch called it at halftime, half court.
Yep.
He ran it in from midfield.
Yeah. I remember that was sick.
Don't forget Deshaun Watson getting kicked in the eye against the Raiders and threw a touchdown pass half blind.
Tom Savage that week one game.
Dude, I mean, it's
he
insane.
He was 7 for 13, 62 yards. He got sacked 6 times, and B.O.B.'s like,
it's insane.
Nope, you're out.
This is, and again, this is why the Browns, with everything going on, decided to do what they did. It's just that everything that's going on didn't prevent them or keep them or have them hedge their bet in giving him the greatest player contract in the history of the National Football League. And friendliest. Richest, friendliest, whatever. And that's why maybe Lamar's unsigned and Kyler Murray's still unsigned and this piece of stationery is still technically valid. But everyone shouldn't sleep on Deshaun Watson's ability. And that's why the Browns fans are caping for him. Even though they've never really had a rooting interest for him. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Okay, we've got Ian Rappaport coming up next from the NFL Media Group. Let's ask him about all this stuff. Training camps are going to be at this point next week, all open, all ready to roll. Rookies, veterans, all of it. That's next right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry, clean feel all day. Back here on the show, Ian Rappaport going to join us in a couple minutes' time when the terrestrial radio audience returns. As you know, we started just literally 1 hour ago at this time. I think in the first commercial break of hour number one, we let everyone know that George Kittle was he was crowdsourcing on Twitter, asking everybody, you know, their thoughts on guy next to me in the exit row put two bags in the overhead. Thoughts on this? And I said, look, you know, first in, first up. That's why I got on the plane first. exit row, you can't put your bags underneath the seat in front of you because it's an exit row. So that's why you get on the plane. You get on the plane, you put it up, you know, you use the overhead bin right away. And I guess you're supposed to only put one up there because I need to leave space for somebody else, as if that person's going to really have your best interest in mind. Never. The chat and cut, by the way, the chat and cuts that I see when they're people are trying to board in your group number,
Please.
They come up. It's just like, no. You're supposed to get on the very end of the line, behind everyone, not just walking up as a mosh pit. I'll just cut it right here and chat and cut.
Yeah,
right.
I had somebody try to
So I said that. I'm like, no, you know, use the space immediately. George Kittle has responded. Rich Eisen, a couple of things to unpack here, Rich. One, I was 19D, middle seat exit row.
Oh.
So what is that? That means it's a three on each side? Is that what it is? No, it can't be.
Yeah.
No, because D would be an aisle.
Usually is.
Is it two and a three? Is it a two and a three situation? It's got to be a 2-3 situation.
2-3-2.
Okay.
2-3-2.
It could be. Well, it can't be 2-3-2.
Well, if he's on a 7-7-7, there might be three rows.
But a D?
A, B.
D sounds like aisle to me, but we trust him. George is not a liar.
Yeah, two. Yeah.
No, a, B.
It's
like
a 2-3. We flew home from New York. We had that.
D.
He calls me dialogical. Diabolical.
The Bismarck.
Treat others how you want to be treated. I agree.
Exactly. I agree with you, George. That's what I'm saying.
But
no, you don't understand that because I said that earlier.
I am fine with that if everybody signs a document going on in the plane that they're going to treat me the same way.
See, that? Come on, bro.
There's always going to be a fly in the ointment. And if there's one fly in the ointment,
it's going to be
just two bags in the overhead.
Yes.
All right. What airlines do people fly on that you can't put a bag under the seat in front of you? That's an exit row thing, isn't
Every
it?
Every exit row.
Right?
Exit row, you really can.
Right. And lastly, you seem like a 1A guy. Hey, George, yeah. I'm not a 1A guy. You know why? Because you can't put anything under the seat in front of you. The 1A, there's a wall.
1A,
it's a
and, 1A and bulkhead.
No, thank you.
There's no,
you're screwed.
Yeah,
you're screwed.
Although I do like that because there's nobody reclining their seat in my face. Which I hate that happens.
I'm fine with
it. Because I'm going to recline too.
I'm a 3A guy.
The
now.
Person in front, you see, back. You could be like, I'm not reclining because I don't want to be that guy for the guy behind
that's
me.
That's how George
and the guy
Kittle
in front
and I,
of you is, and suddenly what?
That's how George Kittle and I choose to live life. But I mean,
I
hey,
need to ask
don't,
George
if cool.
He's a recline guy. Hold on, let me just respond.
Yeah, will
George
you do that? And ask him about the armrest too.
Yeah, you're
in the middle
reclining.
Seat. That's big stuff. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show.
By the way, someone on Twitter had a great tweet regarding you and your plane etiquette.
Okay, well, put a pin in that because we have for a man who's got a hit, if you will, on NFL Network coming up in 18 minutes time, which means I've only got about 15, 16 minutes with him.
If that, because sometimes
my colleague from the NFL Media Group on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, the one and only Rap Sheedy and Rap Report back here on the show. How are you doing, Ian?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing very well. Boy, is there a lot going on.
Embodied by George Kittle? That's all right.
Apparently, it's fine. He accuses me of being a 1A guy and being diabolical on a plane, and I am who I am. That's it. You know, I only know one speed, just like George, you know? So
I'd like to know how he ended up 19C in the middle.
19D.
Not booking early enough?
I don't know,
what
man.
Are we doing here?
He's a man of the people. George Kittle.
He's a big man of the people.
Row 19. Interestingly enough, you know who's in row 19? Debo Samuel.
Hey.
What a segue. God, I'm good. Okay. Let's get into it, man. What's the Debo situation? What's going on? What do you got?
So he is back in San Francisco.
Okay.
He has a camp. That's why he's back there.
Okay.
Although I know, you know, when you post on social media and it's like, San Francisco, everyone's like, oh, my God. But he has a camp.
Okay.
Okay. Still invested in the community, which is a good thing.
Okay.
And his trainer went on and was talking about how he should get paid, which he should be getting paid.
Right.
And the 49ers would like to pay him. It's really just a matter of, you know, do they get to the right number? And do they sort of show him a plan going forward where he is not going to be in a position to be worn down and have his career shortened, which I think was the worries before. Like, he is a dynamic player. He is a great weapon. He is not a running back, and he does not want to be a running back. Like, would he like to take the ball on end arounds and stuff? Yes, I think he would, but he would not like to have, you know, 10 carries up the middle. They did draft a running back in the mid rounds. They have some guys coming back from injury. So I think that, you know, he would be in a situation where he didn't need to be used like that. And all of that will kind of add to the decision of Debo Samuel whether or not to accept an eventual offer from the 49ers.
And so that's a three-part, I guess, wish list. And the money, that can always be worked out. Irreconcilable is where the Niners are located. That's right. Not an issue anymore? Or where does that rank? And that, because that was the hot conversation when we were going to Vegas for the draft in the weeks prior and during the draft, is that Debo just doesn't want to live and be out in Northern California, in Santa Clara. So where does that
hit? Yeah, I mean, I must say, like, I never quite heard it like, I know some talked about it, I never quite heard it like that, where he just did not want to be in California. I think he likes being with a coach who's really good and a team that just went deep into the playoffs. Now, he didn't get the ball a ton in the playoffs at the end, so that was a little concerning. But, I've always said, I believe their issues are fixable. It's just not an easy fix. So it's not just about money. I think money will be part of it. But him showing up for minicamp, didn't do anything, but showed up, allowing them to talk to him, to sort of start the process of, like, you are valued in these ways. Here's how we are going to make it better. I think that probably helped. And the fact that he's back in town, at least somewhat open to a deal, I think that probably helps. There's some good things here. They just got to figure it out completely.
Well, and the last item on that punch list, if you will, Ian Rappaport, that is reconcilable or potentially irreconcilable is Kyle Shanahan codifying, putting down a number or a plan that Debo will give a check mark to that involves play calling and his usage. And so what is the sensitivity on that front? I understand what Debo's is. What about Kyle Shanahan's on that front that you might know about?
Well, one thing about Kyle Shanahan, and he is, as a pure play caller, like, there's a lot of things that go into being a head coach, but just as a play caller, I feel pretty confident in saying he is about as good as it gets.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I imagine that he can come up with a way where they can be really, really successful on offense. They can have dynamic players make dynamic plays and have it be at a point where Debo is okay with the way he's being used. Like, I think they can come up with some sort of a happy medium. Now, it's on the personnel side to find the players, draft the players maybe, to kind of fill the void there. And if Debo's not getting 10 carries a game, then someone else is. Are those players good enough to do it? Is it Trey Sermon, who last year didn't do a ton, was a little injured? Is it someone they drafted this year? I mean, there are options, but it's sort of on the coaching staff and personnel staff now to properly find the pieces to get the same productivity while keeping someone as talented as Debo Samuel as safe as he desires.
Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's the scoop with James G? Yeah, I know your report this week saying that he got a good checkup and report from Dr. Neil Elitrosh out here, the famed orthopedic surgeon and doctor, on his shoulder, and that in mid-August clearance could hit. But the timing, how does this work, and what do you see for his future, Ian Rappaport?
Well, he is throwing and has been throwing for several weeks. That's good.
Okay.
I believe he can throw deep now, make real throws, like the 40-yard out. Like, he can do that. That is very good. That's not what we're talking about. And I think by probably early August, he'll be able to be unrestricted. What we're talking about is him being fully cleared, 100%, not worry about anything, make all the throws in practice, make however many throws a day, 100 throws, whatever it is a day, not have to think twice. That's really what we're talking about when it comes to full clearance. So my understanding is that comes in mid-August. So what that means is it's probably going to be till mid-August to figure out where he's going. At that point, there's no obvious solution right now, no obvious solution. But what if someone is unhappy with a rookie? What if someone's team is better than they realized and they only have a weakness of quarterback? What if someone gets injured? The longer this plays out, the better chance it is the 49ers could have someone to trade him to. But, there is always a possibility that they don't. And then what do they do? You know, do they keep him under the salary? Do they ask him to take a pay cut? Which, you know, who knows if they'll do that? Do they just cut him? Like, there's still so much to play out here.
Well, I mean, wouldn't he demand a release? I mean, wouldn't he just say, look, I mean, clearly you got to move to Lance. Clearly, right? And right. For every possible reason. I don't need to go further into it. And then that's the question. Because a release would bring Seattle into the equation if they would ever want to make a late
right.
mid-August
so
maneuver.
If you're the 49ers, you know that if you cut them, Seattle's going to be called, right? I mean, once you assume that, right? So then, like, that makes cutting him not very palatable, right?
Right. So what do you think?
I'm trying to figure it out. I just cannot, you know, I mean, the reason we're talking about this and the reason it's been such an interesting issue is neither you nor I
yes.
have the answer. There's no answer because they want to trade him. They do believe Trey Lance is going to be really, really good, paying off that big trade they made last year. They don't want to cut him, but they might have to cut him, or they could say, you know what, we're going to pay the salary so he doesn't go anywhere else and he gives us insurance. Like, they could do that too. And if you're Jimmy G, do you demand to be cut, or do you say, you know what, I'll take $20 million. I'll just take $20
million. Ian Rapp.
For the record, Rich,
yes.
I will take $20
million. Very good. I'll mark you down as a yes. Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show. So I still have on my desk, because he hasn't signed yet, Kyler Murray's agents, Kyler Murray stationery missive that got thrown out there right before the combine about he absolutely wants to be your long-term quarterback, Arizona, and he desperately wants to win the Super Bowl, and then all the business talk after that. And now, Tuesday, rubber meets road. It's time for the Arizona Cardinals to open training camp. What can you tell me about Kyler Murray's contract and all of that right now, Ian Rappaport?
You know, it does sound like they're having some conversations. It sounds like those have been somewhat productive. You know, is a deal going to get done in time for training camp? I don't know. But at least, you know, all sides are kind of acknowledging / on the same page that, like, he's going to be there. He's going to be richly paid. An extension is something to discuss this year, not next year, for instance. So then it's just arriving at a number, and it's about negotiations. And to me, judging from where things stand, a deal can get done. The quarterback market is pretty well defined. So it's really just figuring out where he slots. I mean, there's so many big-name guys with big-time deals that, like, it's just a matter of slotting him in. I don't know if they'll be able to do it in time for camp, but to me, this is a deal that could get done.
Well, I mean, the slotting in, if I'm an agent, I'm saying the slot is Deshaun Watson, because my guy doesn't have a hearing and a suspension and lawsuits, and my guy hasn't required you to settle suits with people who haven't even sued you yet, you know, and so on and so forth. And everything, every penny's guaranteed. I mean, isn't that the way everyone... I imagine Lamar Jackson might be saying that to the Ravens. I mean, isn't that the way every quarterback's going to want to be slotted right now, Ian?
Right, but our team's going to say, all right, well, we'll give you, you know, $200 million fully guaranteed. Here's a check, NFL. You know, we're going to do that. I mean, is Michael Bidwell going to write a $200 million check to the NFL? Mm. You know, that's the problem, is when it's fully guaranteed, really fully guaranteed, you have to give it to the NFL and put in escrow so they make sure you have it, essentially. Mm. Kind of an old, antiquated rule, but it is what it is. Teams have not been willing to do fully guaranteed deals for quarterbacks, you know, absent the Vikings and now the Browns. So if you're the Cardinals, like, obviously Kyler will ask for that, I assume. But is the team going to break precedent from what they've done in every other deal and say, all right, or is that the sticking point? Or do you say, you know what, we're not going to give you the full guarantee, but we will give you more than 46 a year. How about that? You know, so there's ways to do it, but I don't know if they'll do the exact, say, Deshaun Watson fully guaranteed deal.
So what are you hearing, though, in the conversations about Lamar and Kyler, and that has the Watson contract affected all of this? What do you think? I understand that the people can get creative, but what are you hearing on that ripple effect?
I would say that has it affected things? Yes, because it is in the conversation. It is what everybody wants. Everyone wants to sort of mimic the fully guaranteed deal and make sure that when quarterbacks do deals, that you get fully guaranteed money. I have not gotten the sense yet that teams are like, okay, you win, we lose, the contract will be fully guaranteed. I believe it'll be something that they'll negotiate for, and if you're a team, you know, like, you're never going to give, in any contract, and I think you're going to give them every single thing they want. You'll say, you know, we're not going to do a fully guaranteed deal, but we'll give you this APY that you want. Like, it's something to negotiate for, and I don't get the sense teams have said, okay, fine, this is now the market.
Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show. Before I let you go and do your NFL Network thing, what is the timing you're hearing on Deshaun Watson? I mean, because you've got to assume something's got to happen right now because training camp opens next Tuesday, and as long as the ruling from the independent arbiter, the judge, isn't zero, the league will have to then decide on whether upping it or reducing it, which I doubt. So there's lots of things left to be played out, even without the ruling just standing on its own. What do you think, Ian?
Are you hearing? So I agree with you that, you know, everyone sort of thinks that the verdict will be in before training camp. Problem is that although Judge Sue Robinson was jointly appointed by the NFL and the NFLPA, she doesn't really work on their timeline. She kind of works on her own timeline, kind of whenever she wants to do it. So, you know, let's say in her mind she wants the two sides to come to a resolution. She can just wait. Like, she really can. There's no reason to actually do anything. Like, we all want it because we all would like, okay, football, like, let's go. But she doesn't work like that, you know? And even though everyone involved has always believed that, you know, a deal would get done, or the verdict would be in before camp, like, there's no reason it actually will. So we're still going to wait. I mean, Monday would be a pretty good day to do it. But again, like, we are on her timeline. She's not on ours.
Wow. I mean, so nobody's basically saying, are you saying the judge really doesn't know training camp's opening Tuesday? And I mean,
but it's not material to her.
It should be, don't you think?
I mean, like, it matters to me.
Well, it matters to the Browns. It matters to the player in question. It matters to the teams. It matters to the league. It matters to literally everybody,
except her. Yeah. But, like, the only thing that matters to her is coming to a right and real and fair and accurate rule.
But, I mean, all the briefs have been in for a week. I mean, okay.
I assume they're very long. It takes a long time to read stuff. I never used to get through books when I was a kid.
So, I guess then last quick one for you. So there are conversations still between both sides, if you will, to come to their own resolution?
I have not heard that there's any substantive real conversations. I just know, I'm saying, if she's going to wait, that would be one potential reason to wait.
Ian,
if they could do a deal.
Thank you very much, Ian Rappaport. Greatly appreciate it. Let's chat again soon. If not, I'll see you in Canton.
All right,
brother.
Look forward to it, Rich. Take care.
Right back at you. At Rapsheet, the one and only Ian Rappaport. Can you imagine? Browns training camp opens, Deshaun reports, because he has to, because he wants to. I mean, he's the quarterback. He's the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. As of right now, Deshaun Watson will quarterback the Browns against Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. It's going to be Baker.
Could be Sam.
It's going to be Baker. I mean, and the decision hasn't been made yet, and I mean, it'll be easy media wise for the team to handle. Like, we're waiting just like you. We're waiting just like you. We've got a great team. Myles Garrett, latest member of the 99 Club on in Madden. Oh. You know, I mean, we got a great team. Running backs are ready. Line is healthy. Defense hopefully better. We're ready. We just need, you know, our quarterback to not be suspended for the full year. And she's waiting. Wow. Does anybody just like ping her? Does somebody ping Sue Robinson and say, hey, what's up?
I mean,
How close might you be coming up with that number?
next Thursday. Like,
what's, wow.
What do you think?
Okay. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Braxton Berrios of the Jets and also Najee Harris of the Steelers.
All right.
Still to come right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Is it true your dad's a Jet fan?
Yes. I mean, such a Jets fan that he has a Jets tattoo right here.
Oh, my gosh. When did he get that ink? Was he inspired by Richard Todd's play in the 70s? Or was it Ray Lucas in the 90s that caused your dad to get that ink? What was it? Do you know the story?
The big thing about my dad and being a Jets fan, and I was once a Jets fan, now definitely a Giants fan, 1969.
I grew up a Jets fan. And go on.
Yeah, 1969, the first AFC team won the Super Bowl, the year my dad was born. Born in New York, growing up, everyone loved the Giants probably a little bit more. So he kind of just went the other way, being a Giants fan, and kind of passed it on to me. So I grew up being a fan of Curtis Martin, Thomas Jones, Chad Pennington, the Mark Sanchez era with Rex Ryan and those guys. So I think he kind of got it probably maybe like when the Mark Sanchez era was going. I don't think he did it because of that.
Sure.
He always had a passion. He always wanted to do it. And one day he just made up his mind. He said he's going to put a Jets tattoo right here.
I don't know what I'm freaking out about more. The fact that you could be a Jet, you were living and dying with the Jets while I was living and dying with the Jets, or that your dad and I were born in the same year and you could be my son. And I've got a 10, almost 8, and a 5 at home. And this is not about me. It's about you, Saquon. But so was your dad disappointed that the Jets didn't take you?
No. My dad was just happy that, you know, he see his son living his dream.
Or didn't get a chance to take you.
Oh, yeah. But he was happy, just like I was saying, his son, him and my mother, very fortunate to have both parents in my life. You know, I've always went to them and told them what I want to do and what I'm passionate about. And they always give me great advice and try to show me the way what I got to do to get to my dream and live out my dream. So when I got my name called, it could have been the Patriots. It could have been whoever. And my dad and parents are going to be happy for. Obviously, my dad probably would like me to be going to the Jets. But being close to home, being in New York, you know, I can't ask for nothing better.
Yeah. And, you know, for me to say this, you know, that it was, I'm disappointed you weren't a Jet. Also, could be construed that I'm not happy that Sam Darnold was the one who was taken by the Jets, and obviously he's very good. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how you respond to this, but I'll ask it anyway. I can kind of figure it out, but I'll ask it anyway. You heard the conversation throughout the season that Giants fans should have taken Eli's replacement. How do you respond to something like that?
The way I was raised, my parents said there's people that's always going to have something good to say about you, and there's people that's always going to have something bad to say about you. So I don't really get bothered by that comment. My mindset is that it is what it is, and the Giants took me. I have my own expectations and my own standards, and I'm going to come in there every single day ready to work and try to lead my team to a championship.
Great Saquon Barkley. We hope he's healthy. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Every golf equipment company claims to be longer off the tee, but Callaway's new Rogue ST driver is the only one built to completely bomb it. I should know because I am using it, and I love my new Rogue ST Max. That's the version of the Rogue ST driver I love. There's four different types that's engineered for maybe you. It's been engineered for every player. I like the Max. It's an incredible combo of distance and forgiveness. The Max D is a dedicated draw model for players who need more shot shape correction. I'm just not there yet. I wish I knew how to do that stuff. Oh, man, now, if you need something more low spin, the Max LS gives you a stronger trajectory and more neutral ball flight. True players out there, there's the Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS. Compact, low spin head. Tour players love it. Callaway's thought through every aspect of speed, so all you've got to do is go Rogue. Find your Rogue ST driver at CallawayGolf.com/GoRogue. Last night's All-Star Game started by Clayton Kershaw here in Dodger Stadium. If there's any human being that deserves that sort of moment, it's him. What an incredible player he has been. Pitcher he has been. Hall of Famer he is. And then just Hall of Fame human being. He is somebody here in Southern California that everybody loves. Honestly, I know there are Dodger fans that prior to him having won that World Series in the bubble season, you know, You might have kicked a rock here in LA and found somebody who thought like, oh, he's just not a big game guy, right? I mean, like, you might have maybe heard that. But he's just a good dude, good human. I've also seen him in front of his house. I've trick-or-treated in his neighborhood. He sits in front of his house. He's the one out there giving candy to kids.
That's amazing.
He and his family. I've seen it. I actually strolled up to him in a Mr. Incredibles in an Incredibles uniform, a costume myself. Okay, I've seen it. But just in case anybody wants a fresh reminder of who he is, what makes him tick, and how incredible a human he is on top of what a great pitcher he is and what he means to people. A 10-year-old boy. Oh, I'm going to get emotional here. A 10-year-old boy found his way in front of Clayton Kershaw's post-game press conference, okay? Or was it right before? A dozen questions about his first career All-Star start on Tuesday. So it may have been before. It may have been after. I don't know. But the kid's name is Blake Grice. He's a 10-year-old. And after Kershaw took all the questions, he saw a kid waiting to talk to him. That because he got up, thought the press conference was over, he sits back down and takes a question from this kid, 10-year-old Blake Grice. This is what the 10-year-old said to him.
I'm Blake Grice. I'm from Denver, Colorado, and I want to tell you a quick little story.
Okay.
So my grandpa loved you. He watched the 1988 series, and he wanted to meet you and Vince Scully one day. So this moment is important to me because I'm meeting you for him.
Oh, wow.
And he was from Redondo Beach, and a little while ago, some years ago, he died from brain cancer. And... oh, my gosh.
Oh, come here, dude. Great to meet you.
He gets up. He gives the kid a hug. Come on.
Great to meet you. Thanks for telling me. That took a lot of courage to tell me that, so I appreciate that. It's great to meet you. Granddad sounded like an awesome guy. Yeah? Okay. Good. All right. Thanks for coming up. That took a lot of courage, man. That was awesome. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for coming. All right. Is there do you have a parent here or anything?
Like, that was great.
Oh, according to a story in MLB.com, Blake's grandfather, Graham, died of brain cancer more than 7 years ago. So I guess he was three. Might not remember much about his grandpa, but he knows this story.
Wow.
Before he passed away, Graham, his grandfather, made a list with his two grandchildren detailing everything they were going to do once he beat cancer for a fifth time, including visiting the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, meeting Vince Scully, among other things. Graham passed away, never got a chance to experience those moments because on the list was meeting Clayton Kershaw, and that's why Blake said, I'm meeting him for you.
Oof.
It's dusty in here, folks. Man. I don't know where it is, how it is by you, but I'm assuming it is the same way. God, I love Clayton Kershaw. And just
it's when I text you guys so yesterday beautiful. About this, and I asked you, had you seen it? I fully admit, man, I was sitting on the couch caught up in my emotions. I mean, people that know me know my grandpa was my very best friend. And as many, you know, African-American men of his age, he was a Dodgers fan. So I grew up my entire childhood was spent watching Dodger baseball with him, reading him the box scores. That's how I got to know all the players. And he'd explain to me what all the categories meant. And I can remember the first time I made it to Dodger Stadium, I called him.
Yeah.
I was on the third base side, and I just tried to describe to him what I was watching. And so when I saw this kid talk about, like, grandfather stories get me. So, like I said, I won't lie. I watched this yesterday, and I had tears in my eyes just kind of thinking of my own grandpa, our relationship with the Dodgers, and to see this kid get to do that. Man, life is, I mean, for as many bad things as we talk about, like, just the goodness in human beings sometimes.
Exactly.
Kind of resonates.
And Kershaw, you could see, like, you know, the light from him. And I just love the last part, like, you got a parent here?
A I take back all the bad things I said.
Yeah, oh, man, Clayton Kershaw, man.
That was that. I mean, beautiful. Guys, that really did. Like I said, me and my grandfather beautiful. And that kid, that got me yesterday.
Got me to thinking. Clayton Kershaw starting last night's game. I've got a list here in my hand. We kind of batted this around pre-show yesterday. Let's get to it right here.
Yeah, that's it.
Top five lefties of the 21st century. Thank you, sir. Let's get to it. I've got number. You have any baseball music? What do you got?
I can sit here and go.
Nothing. No. It's okay. Number five on the list is your guy Brockman, and also the guy in Chicago, Illinois. John Lester is on this list. Number five, 200 wins. This is his entire career in the 21st century. 200 wins. Almost 2,500 strikeouts, 3.66 ERA, five-time All-Star. He had nine of his 22 starts. He won nine in the postseason. He was the MVP of the NLCS the year the Cubs won it all, yeah. And his three World Series titles: two with the Red Sox and one with the Cubs. I think that kind of is that's your resume right there.
That counts.
CC Sabathia's got a Cy Young, which is why I think we put him above.
Yeah.
Lester on this list.
50
Thank
more
you,
wins,
sir.
Too.
Yeah. You know, you get 50 more wins, 251 yeah. wins in his career, 3,000 strikeouts, a World Series title with the Yankees, six-time All-Star, 10 wins in his 23 postseason starts. There you go. Number three on the list right here. I like it.
This is great.
This is, you know, this is just like what they play when there's somebody coming warming up in between innings, right? Number three on the list is Kershaw, nine-time All-Star, three-time Cy Young Award, five-time winner of the ERA title, 192 wins, 2,700 career strikeouts, and his postseason career just 30 starts. He's 13-12 in his 30 career postseason starts with a 4 ERA, but he's still three on my list right there. Number two is Madison Bumgarner. How do you not go with Mad Bum? As,
yeah, postseason, you know, it's kind of...
That's it.
Yeah.
World Series MVP, three World Series wins with the Giants, four-time All-Star. The only 132 career wins in this century, but it's postseason. I mean, that's the end. He had a save. Remember, he saved one?
Yeah.
That was one. He said against your Mets. Against the Royals, who your Mets about to play. But number one on this list, yes, sir, even though he did have time in the previous century, it's Randy Johnson. Would you believe in this century, Randy Johnson, 143 wins, 2,100 strikeouts, three Cy Youngs all in a row. He had that World Series title against the Yankees in 2001, won the strikeout leader award four times, four-time All-Star. I mean, two times he had the ERA title in this century. Those are the top pitchers of the 21st century here on the Rich Eisen Show from the left side.
Randy Johnson's baseball reference page is just...
But again...
It's amazing.
Randy Johnson was unhittable with the Mariners, okay?
Right.
From 2000 to 2009... 143 wins, 32 complete games, 12 shutouts. His ERA was 3.34, 2,182 strikeouts, three Cy Youngs all in a row, four All-Stars, a World Series championship for the Diamondbacks. Schilling obviously had a huge role to do. And games 1, 2, 6, and 7 they won. And guess who started games 1, 2, 6, and 7? Randy and Kurt. But four-time All-Star. As I mentioned, he had the strikeout title four times and ERA title two times. And that's just in this century for Randy Johnson, which is why I'm placing him above Madison Bumgarner, who, with all due respect to Dodger fans, I'm placing above Kershaw. Honorary mention, we were talking about, Johan Santana a little bit?
Yeah, Johan, he had a great little run.
Who else are we talking about? Chris Sale is in this mix, too.
Sale.
Top lefties of the 21st century. We forget anybody? I'm sure we have.
Randy Johnson's last year at Arizona, he was 40. He led the league in strikeouts, 290.
It's insane. Dude, unhittable. And in terms of all-star memories, you know.
John Kruk.
His moment with John Kruk, where he threw one over Kruk's. Next time Randy's coming on,
It was over or behind him?
It was like five.
Yeah, but it was like.
It was five feet above his head. Like it wasn't close. He was screwing around.
Yeah. And then Kruk put the bat
he buzzed
over
above his tower.
And then
his tower.
Turned his helmet around right, backwards.
And then he threw the slider, yeah. Which is just rude.
What year was that?
Rude. Bumgarner was an MVP of the NLCS as well as the MVP. And that save. That's the one, right?
93 also.
That's the one where he came in against the Royals and he saved it. Mm-hmm. Didn't he win game six and he saved game seven? Isn't that what he did in that World Series?
It was something ridiculous like
you
that.
You know?
Dude was a monster.
I'm wondering if he gets in the Hall of Fame just based on those.
Madison Bumgarner's a Hall of Famer, I think, yeah. You don't?
You know, long-term resume isn't as good as...
Oh, man.
Yeah, but much like Terrell Davis, you take the short resume.
You know, we're 22 years into this century, and he's number two on our list of best lefties, period.
He also won the Silver Slugger twice.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.